Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. It's been several weeks since we've last talked to Tom. As a matter of fact, to be more explicit, it was last year when we last spoke to Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. So as we begin the program this 15th of January, it's great to say welcome Tom back to the airwaves with us, and also to say to him, well, I hope you had a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you, and also Happy New Decade. We'll talk about that as well. Tom, welcome back, and look forward to this next year, 2020.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting year, and Happy New Year to, and Happy Decade to you as well, Lockwood, and of course, all the listeners. You know, millions and millions of listeners out there.
There are millions of them out there. And as we begin the program, let's look at your expectations for 2020. But very quickly, just curious, what's the weather like in London?
Well, it has been absolutely miserable. Today, the sun is shining and everything else, but the past week, it has been wet, cold, dark, the sort of day that in the morning you just want to stay underneath the covers all day if you can.
Hey, listen, there are a lot of days like that. All right, let's talk about 2020 and what you're expecting. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the events of today and recent events there in Iraq and Iran. But looking forward into 2020 and, you know, all that you're seeing lining up, the royals, for example, we'll be chatting about Meghan and family. But my question to you is, what are you expecting in 2020?
A lot of trouble. It's like the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Mm-hmm.
And we are certainly in interesting times. Of course, you have the presidential elections. Brexit is by no means over. It's only half finished. There's a lot of negotiations yet to go. The British economy is starting to shrink. The European economy is not doing very well. I think we will continue to have problems in the Middle East, obviously. Syria is unresolved. Libya is becoming more problematic. There are problems in the Western Sahara and the Sahel region. It's going to be a very interesting year.
We're going to have to take this list down and put it up on our Facebook posting page and a few other places, even on the walls here at the studio, and then we'll tick them off as they become topics of discussion. Of course, the Middle East will be a topic of discussion, even in today's program. Well, as we begin the program with you, Tom, the first question, simply because we're here in the States, the announcement today that finally, the articles of impeachment have been sent to the Senate, and the impeachment program process will begin. How well covered is that, and what's the feeling there in the European community?
It's being covered very well. There's lots of coverage. It's not getting as much coverage as Iran, but it's certainly getting an awful lot of coverage. They are a bit shocked to be... not to put too fine a point on it, at the Senate Republicans, especially Mitch McConnell's efforts to prevent any testimony. And The Guardian wrote one article, I think it was an editorial, in which said it was a sort of reverse of the Moscow show trials of the 1930s. Whereas in the 1930s, people would just be assumed they were guilty,
mm-hmm.
and would be put on trial for 10 minutes, then pronounced guilty, taken off into a back room, and shot. And in this case, that the assumption is that he's not guilty, put on trial for 10 minutes, and released.
Testimony
is taken in either case.
Okay, you had me worried if he was going to be shot, but he's not going to be shot, but the theory is that he'll be released. Okay. Well, you know, the other aspect of this is the Senate Majority Leader has pointed out they would take the same approach that was established in the previous impeachment trial with President Clinton.
Well, I'm not familiar with that trial, I'll be honest. I wasn't covering that trial, so I'm not familiar with it. So you've got me there. I will confess.
Okay.
It does seem odd. I'm just telling you what's being reported in the press here, that they can't see how you can have a trial when there's no testimony, and there are witnesses.
Well, this goes back to the comment a few moments ago that this is part of the misconception of the news coverage, and I'm not going to fault anyone here. It's just become so convoluted, so complex, and arguably so tiresome. We're kind of tired of it here. I'm curious, is there a newfound excitement about what's taking place in the United States today? And this is fairly fresh. You're hearing about this. You're some 5 hours ahead of us, and this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate that. So it's almost 5 o'clock your time there in London. You know, is this breaking news on the in the media there?
Yes, it is breaking news. It's breaking news that Jeremy Nadler and Adam Schiff are going to be the managers for the House. It's not really that. Those are sort of details, I suppose. You know, it's not something which is unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
They expected this to happen. So it's not like literally a Ukrainian plane being shot out of the sky or something like that. There's no surprises here. And it's just moving on to the next stage is how it's being interpreted and seen.
All right. Related to this, and I'm curious if there's been any coverage about the Democrat debates last evening that would be...
That actually probably got more debate.
Really?
Or more coverage in a way than the impeachment because of Elizabeth Warren's claim that Bernie Sanders said that no woman could be elected president at the moment.
Is there a sense of belief in Elizabeth Warren's remarks? Is that given any sense of credibility?
You ask me for a totally subjective, you know, you ask one person, they'll say yes. You ask another person, they'll say no.
Wow.
I think that I have no idea.
All right.
I mean, it's something... there's a long article saying that this looks as if it was a misconstruction by the staffs of both Bernie Sanders' campaign team and Elizabeth Warren. You know, basically people almost intentionally misinterpreting each other to gain the maximum political advantage.
What else is new? Yeah, what else is new? All right. Speaking of this, and I know we're going to get to, well, we'll get to France here in just a few moments because of the efforts in Africa, but the topic of national health care continues to resonate in this country. Is that a topic there in the UK that they're paying attention to in light of the experience with national health care there?
No, we haven't had a great deal of coverage of that debate here.
All right. Well, it's going to be a growing interest here as the Democrats are trying to come up with an approach to address the president's success in many areas. Speaking of which, and we're going to chat about this at greater length, the decision by the president to take out Qasem Soleimani. How much coverage did that get? And we'll get to the Iraq-Iran issue in just a moment, but the president's decision, what was the feeling there in the UK and the European press?
Oh, my goodness. You know, there were, most people were opposed to it, but not in the, not because they liked Soleimani. They were opposed to it because it was an attack on a sovereign country, a sovereign government, as well as an individual. And therefore, it was pretty much interpreted as an act of war and very dangerous thing to do. Now, what they were particularly angry about here in Europe was the total absence of anything even closely resembling consultation with the Allies. That it was done completely off, you know, shot from the hip.
Well, no,
and that really made them very, very angry. And recently, the British Defense Secretary, has said, we've got to think about whether or not we can count on the United States for anything in the future.
All right. A question for you. In light of the, experience under the previous administration with President Obama, we'll put, the question about Al-Awlaki, up. Was there any discussion about that and his son that was killed shortly thereafter?
I'm sorry. Who? I didn't catch that.
Al-Awlaki. He was a U.S. citizen who was working for ISIS. And he was taken out by drone. And his son, a 16-year-old, was likewise removed as a result of a drone attack some 2 weeks later, if I'm not mistaken. My question is, was there any discussion about that?
No, the general feeling was that President Trump ordered the attack for the following reasons. One, he thought it would win him votes in 2020.
Oh.
There'd be a rally around the flag feeling. And the other was that he was angry at the attack on the American embassy in Baghdad. They do not, I'm not saying that they're very skeptical about his claims that Soleimani was planning lots and lots of other attacks.
He planned.
Because he has not, wait a minute, let me finish. Because he's not put forward any hard, concrete evidence to back that up. And that the normal procedure is to put forward the evidence, consult, then attack.
Well, I can tell you that under President Obama, we don't know of any indication where that was established. And I mentioned Al-Awlaki and his son, both who were killed by drone attacks. And I'm just questioning. I don't remember the European community being outraged about that. That's just.
Sometimes I think that you think that the only other president was Obama.
No. It's just we're intrigued by the reaction to everything that President Trump does.
I mean, why is it that you hate everything Obama did?
No. We're just wondering, why do you hate everything?
No,
we're simply asking, that was what was done.
Everything he does seems to be to attack whatever Obama did.
No, that's not attacking him, Tom.
If Obama did something, it was wrong. If he did something, it's right.
No, we tend to agree with President Obama's decision. We think he made the right decisions then. We're just fascinated that now President Trump makes the same decision and it's criticized nationwide, worldwide. You know, talking about hate, that's the question we're asking. Why does everybody hate President Trump? We'll take a quick break on that. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, and we're having this conversation some 5 hours in advance of our program airing on top of this because he is some 5 hours ahead of us. So as this is airing, it's moving on towards midnight where he is in London. Tom, let's talk. We were chatting a moment ago. I was pointing out that there seems to be this great hatred for Trump. And I'm just doing a comparison of what President Obama did, which I thought was a wise decision on his part. And I think that this was a wise decision on the part of President Trump. But let's move on. The impact of that in Iran and the fact that Iran shot down, and this is with a very strong evidence, a Ukrainian airline. And what is the feeling there in the European community in the UK?
Well, you know, they're very angry with Iran. And they're angry, with everyone, basically. Of course, we know that initially when the plane was shot down, Iran denied that they had anything to do with the shooting down. And then when videotapes were released showing that a missile actually hit the plane and that it was undeniably launched from an Iranian missile site, they had to admit it. And I think more importantly is not so much what the Europeans think of this, because the Europeans knew all along, as well as the CIA and the Americans, that it was the Iranians, but what the Iranians think about it.
Right.
And the Iranians are furious. And they're furious because they've been knocked off of their moral pedestal. You know, they have been able, after the killing of Qasem Soleimani, they were able to point to the United States and say, you are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. You're shooting these people down. You're killing our people and so forth and so on. We have God behind us. We're good Muslims. We wouldn't dream of doing anything like this. And then they do it.
Well,
and not only do they do it, but the government denies they did it, so they're hypocritical as well. And the result is riots, big headlines shouting shame, shame, shame in Iran, which when you think about that, how the press is controlled there, that's a very brave thing to say, really speaks for a lot.
Well, now, the other aspect of this, and I don't know if you're aware of this, they now have identified two missiles that apparently hit the airplane. And it is interesting that the Iranian government had attempted to deny any participation in this. What impact has this had on the governance of Iran? And is there a possibility this could interrupt or disrupt the current leadership?
It already is. It already is. And I mean, I personally, and I know I'm allowed to give my personal opinion, I don't think they did it intentionally. I think that you had a situation of heightened tensions, and somebody got nervous and pushed the button. You know, that's my guess.
Okay.
I don't think, they would be so stupid as to shoot down a civilian airliner and make themselves look even more stupid. But it's the denial. It's the trying to cover it up. It's the whitewash. You know, when you're trying to paint your opponent, black.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, all right, let's move on to the impact this is going to have on the nuclear accord, because it then segues into a conversation about what Europe is demanding of Iran now. And has the opinion of Iran changed as a result of this action? And which, of course, goes back to the initiation by President Trump, I might add. What is the future of the nuclear accord?
Well, the Europeans have served notice that the they feel that the Iran now has gone too far in enrichment, uranium enrichment, that they are now in breach of the nuclear accord. Now, you ask the question, though, does this mean that it's damaged relations with between Europe and Iran? I think it's more likely that it's damaged. I think more damaged is relations between Europe and the U.S. because they trace this back to the American withdrawal from the nuclear accord, and that each sort of additional escalatory step has largely been initiated by the United States, by the Trump administration. And so the feeling is a growing feeling that there's a serious dangers here to the Western alliance caused by what they see as American unilateralism.
You know,
and this is where we go back to what I call the shoot from the hip, lack of consultation, and that you can't have an alliance without unilateralism. I think you're getting into the position, I wrote a piece the other day, Article 5, if Iran were to attack something in the U.S., like the, you know, a trade center or something like that, well, you might want to invoke Article 5 of NATO treaty. Well, unfortunately, there's also something called Article 4, which says you have to consult as well.
The issue, and this brings us up back to Qasem Soleimani. I will say to you that the president had determined early on and had made decisions back in June or July of last year that, and it was great concern from the Pentagon and intelligence sources about General Soleimani, that if he resulted in the death of any Americans, and there's seems to be strong evidence that
but he didn't tell anyone else.
Well, that he would be targeted.
He didn't tell anyone else.
Ah, well, I you know, maybe that's because there's some questions as to the security of the information, but we won't belabor that.
You have to consult. You can't work in a vacuum.
All right, let's not belabor that issue. Let's talk about this again.
That's an important issue.
Yeah, I understand, but we're belaboring it. Let's talk about the arrest of a British ambassador in Iran. How come?
Ah, yes. Well, that was interesting. He decided that he wanted to go to a vigil for the victims of the Ukrainian plane.
Right.
And he thought this was going to be a peaceful vigil, and so he went along, and unfortunately, it turned into a proper protest.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he knew it was a protest, according to the British Foreign Office, he left. But he was photographed at the vigil, and the Iranian authorities said, ah, he was there as part of the protest and arrested him. There was obviously a protest about the arrest, and he's been released. The Iranians are very keen to, at all times, keep a very close eye on anything involving the British. They see the fine hand of the British behind almost everything that the United States does.
All right. I was just curious about that. All right, Tom, since we're talking about the Brits, we're going to get back to that right after this break. I want to chat with you about really a quick wrap up on Brexit, future of the Britain's Labour Party. I also want to find out about the royals, particularly Harry and Meghan. Are they going to be moving to Canada? You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom's joining us from London, England, where it's some 5 hours ahead of us, so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Tom, the first question, just very quickly, future of Brexit?
Well, on the 31st of January at 11 p.m., the United Kingdom will leave the European Union. That, of course, is not the end of the matter. There are still a lot of trade negotiations. The details have to be worked out. What has been worked out is the political framework in which those trade negotiations will take place. Boris Johnson has said he wants to complete those trade negotiations by the end of December, that is the end of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The European negotiators say basically, good luck.
Well, I tell you what, how long has this been going on? 3 years? 4 years?
3.5 years.
3.5 years. You're counting. All right. What happens to the issue of the Irish? What happens to the decision on the Irish border?
I think that's still details
okay.
have to be negotiated.
All right.
There's so many details. As they say, the devil's in the detail.
Right.
And there's still the possibility that, and Boris has hinted at it, that if we don't get the rest of the Europe falling in line behind what Britain wants by the end of 2020, Britain will simply leave without a deal.
Okay. Next question. What's the future of the Labour Party, which lost miserably in the last election?
Oh, gosh. That is such a difficult one to answer. It really depends on who's elected leader. But even so, it doesn't look good for the Labour Party, which I believe doesn't look good for the country. I'm not, despite what everyone thinks, I'm not a socialist. I don't support the Labour Party. I don't support a lot of their far-left policies. But I think it's very important that any democratic country have an opposition. And there is none at the moment. At the moment, the Labour Party lost the election because basically they were far, far too left, far too left-wing. And I think they might stay there on the left. Britain is not a left-wing country. It's a social democratic country.
Okay. Well,
it's further left than America,
yes.
But it's not a left-wing country.
Maybe we can send some Democrats over to the UK to help the Labour. All right. What about other parties? Lib Dems, for example, an organization that you're associated with.
The way the electoral system is structured in this country is that it favors a two-party system.
Mm.
Elsewhere in Europe, you have something called proportional representation, which favors a multi-party electoral system.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all based on what percentage of the total poll the parties receive. So in the case of the Liberal Democrats, they received about 17% of the poll,
okay,
but only 10 seats
right.
out of 600.
So, okay. So they're right now, it's the conservatives have the upper hand. All right.
86 seat majority is whopping.
Oh, really? Okay. Let's talk.
Huge.
All right. Let's talk about another item in Europe. We're going to get to the royal family here in just a moment. Huawei. What's happening with Huawei in Britain?
Well, we've had a visit this week from America's Deputy National Security Advisor,
mm-hmm.
basically saying to the British, do not use Huawei. Do not use their 5G technology in your defense systems.
Mm-hmm.
And the British say, well, we want to for several reasons. One is it's cost effective. Two, it's the latest generations. It's the best there is. And we need to have the best. And of course, the American view is that Huawei may be a private company, but it is based in a state which is controlled by the Communist Party.
And the military.
The Communist Party controls the economy and can dictate to companies what they want them to do. And so they, as you probably know, are concerned that this technology be used to undermine intelligence efforts, not only in the UK, but in the US as well, because of our close right. intelligence links.
Yeah, and of course, the Communist Party also is very closely allied to the Chinese army, the Communist army there in
well, it
in
all China. Comes under the party.
Yeah, it comes under the party. All right.
Everything comes under the party.
Let's talk now about, speaking of parties, the royal family, Harry and Meghan. That was an interesting story that broke last week, but apparently there's been some some adjustments within the family. Are Harry and Meghan planning to move to Canada?
Well, how can you stop them? You know, lock them up in the tower?
Well, here's the question. Now, what is Canada's relationship with the UK?
Canada is part of the Commonwealth, and it recognizes the Queen as the head of state.
Mm-hmm.
So that is basically it. There is a governor general who is appointed by the Queen, who acts as the Queen's representative, in Canada. And you have a Westminster type government, with a prime minister, basically modeling the British Parliament. Now, what has been suggested, I don't know if it will happen, is that perhaps Harry becomes the governor of Canada,
mm-hmm.
Which is basically the Queen's representative in Canada.
Is that a paid job?
I think it probably is, okay. Which might conflict with his other ambitions, which are to basically set up his own business, peddling things like perfume and, you know, diet sheets and things like that. And a lot of people are a bit concerned about that. They say that, you know, he says, I want to be independent. I don't want to be a royal anymore. I want to be on my own. Well, he is a royal. You know, you can't get away from when right. you were born. You can't get away from your past. And if you start selling Meghan perfume or Prince Harry aftershave lotion, he's cashing in on the fact that he's a royal.
Right. So what's the feeling there? Is there a
split?
Okay.
Split. There's a lot of sympathy. There's a lot of sympathy with anyone who lives in glass houses as the royal family does.
Right.
And people who were born to it rather than sought it.
Okay.
Which is obviously Harry's case. There's very little sympathy for Meghan.
Really?
Well, she knew exactly what she was getting into.
Oh.
She wasn't born to this. She married into it. She
right.
made a choice.
Very good point. Tom, I want to move on to issues across the pond. Several items, specifically with France. You've got a note here that France is stepping up a fight against the jihadists in Africa. And then I want to talk to you about, well, I read in the paper yesterday that the French attorneys, lawyers in France, are going on strike. Let's start with the French issue with the economy in France and the lawyers going on strike. That was a shock. Why would the lawyers go on strike? They would make money in this kind of environment.
Well, it's all related to the pensions.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the French love going on strike. No, my French friends will probably be furious I said that.
That's true.
I'll be honest, I haven't been following that story. I do not know why the lawyers are going on strike. I'll just repeat, my late brother-in-law was a lawyer who, used to crack lots of lawyers' jokes about, what's a thousand lawyers chained together at the bottom of the sea?
A good start.
Right,
yeah. I'm just curious.
And they may be saying the same thing at the moment in France. What's the 1,000 French lawyers going on strike? A good start.
Well, I just find it interesting that the strike continues. Is there any coverage of that, just significant coverage, or has this become a sort of a standard story at this point?
I think it's moved on to the back pages a bit, yes.
All right. Let's talk about France and the jihadists in Africa.
Well, they have a situation where since 2012, the jihadists have been gaining in power in the what are called the Sahel countries.
Mm-hmm.
There's six countries, most of them ex-French colonies like Chad and countries such as that, Mauritania. And in the past year in particular, it's been getting really bad. A lot of heavy fighting, hundreds and hundreds of people killed. And the French have been in there. They have, at the moment, 4,500 troops. They have just had a summit in Paris where Macron agreed with the leaders of six Sahel countries to increase the French presence by another 220 to start with. There are another 12,000 UN forces in the area, and I think about 5,000 that actually are drawn from the countries in the region, but they are not very well equipped and or well trained. What they've agreed to is to put it all under French command, which is very important, so that you have a coordinated approach. Now, from your point of view, one thing they are concerned about is that there have been rumors from the Pentagon that the U.S. is planning to pull out of Africa entirely. You have something called the Joint Africa Command with 1,000 troops in Africa, including two sites in Niger in the Sahel, where you have two drone bases.
Mm-hmm.
And these drone bases are basically used for reconnaissance and intelligence purposes, which are fed to the French and UN forces. And they are very concerned that those drone bases are going to be withdrawn and they will be left without proper intelligence. The British are there as well. They're there with helicopters, but they don't have the same drone facilities that the United States has.
Well, of course, I just want to remind you that the drone was used to remove Qasem Soleimani. I just have to bring that up. Let's talk.
Yeah, well, drones can be used for different purposes.
I know. Let's talk about Turkey and Libya before we go to the break. What's happening there?
Turkey and Libya. Well, Turkey and Russia, I think would be a more accurate way of saying it, are getting a bit chummy in Libya. And they are they're getting together. They're signing contracts with the government in Libya. The problem is the government in Libya is not really in control of Libya. And so not only are they signing contracts, but they're sending troops to support the government of Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj, who is being opposed by General Haftar. You're getting a rather dicey situation because the Europeans are staying a bit aloof from this.
All right.
And the reason they're staying aloof is because they can't agree who to support. The French and Italians appear to be leaning towards General Haftar, who's not in power. He's not the prime minister. And the rest of the EU is leaning towards Fayez Sarraj.
Right now, and I'm going to go to a break, because the issue in North Africa is very unstable at this point.
Very unstable.
All right.
And West Africa.
This goes back to our predictions as to what to expect in 2020. We're going to take a
quick... Mrs. Merkel is worried it might turn into another Syria.
Wow. Very interesting. We're talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Coming up, two items. We're going to talk about Australia burning and Indonesia drowning. And then we're going to talk about the Museum of Revolting Food. food. I'm looking forward to that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, wrapping it up with two items here. Let's talk about, I'm sure this is an issue associated with global climate change, Australia burning and Indonesia drowning.
Yes, well, I think you've probably heard a lot about Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear-cut climate change. Climate change is one of the factors, as they say.
Okay, I like that.
But it's when people deny that climate change is any factor at all that the environmentalists, I think, get a bit concerned. And as I said, you've probably heard a lot about the fires in Australia. You may not have heard so much about the rain and the sinking, mm-hmm. literally the sinking in Indonesia, where you've had in the past couple of months 400,000 people have had to abandon their homes in Indonesia because of heavy rains and the fact that the soil is literally sinking below sea level and the sea is coming in.
Okay, now the issue of the soil sinking has nothing to do with global climate change. It's called subsidence.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. It's subsidence. Then this
it's partly subsidence, but it's partly rising sea levels as well.
Oh, well, of course.
Roughly 25%. Subsidence is caused by the fact that they've had a lot of problems with the wells being polluted.
Okay.
They've had to sink deeper and deeper wells, which has dried out the soil, which has caused it to sink. But one of the reasons is because the fact that the rivers now are being backed up with seawater and things like that from rising sea levels.
Well, we are seeing a change in the earth. We're also seeing a move of the North Pole, and I don't think that's part of climate change either. But that's another topic for another time. Let's move on to the Museum of Revolting Food.
Yes, in Malmo, Sweden. Oh, I love this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a museum where they have things on display, such as a liqueur with dead mice in it.
Well,
and you're invited to taste it. And when you walk in, they don't give you tickets. They give you sick bags.
I can imagine. Well, we've had situations now, and I'm trying to remember. There is a vodka that's being produced from elephant dung.
Oh yeah, no, they've got that. They've got
okay.
Oh, by the way, there are two foods in here in this museum which I really feel you should know about.
Mm-hmm.
Pop tarts and Twinkies.
You know what? That's more revolting than the dead mouse in the what was the mouse in?
Well, it's in the Museum of Revolting Food.
Okay, yeah, I can handle that one. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and look, Pop Tarts and Twinkies now in the Museum of Revolting Food. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, as always, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. And as we conclude this first program of 2020, looking forward to a very volatile but also interesting year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.